welcome to the Design Files Talks, a new podcast from Australia's most popular design blog. We are an enhanced podcast, which means if you listen to TDF Talks using the Overcast or Pocket Casts apps, you will see images and links in your player while you listen. I'm your host, Lucy Fagans, and I'm the founder and editor of The Design Files. Every 2 weeks, this podcast features an inspiring chat with a noteworthy Australian creative, from designers, makers and artists to successful creative entrepreneurs to notable architects, gallerists and more. For our fourth episode, we chat to a young Australian designer making serious waves both at home and abroad. Despite having only launched his own studio in 2014, David Flack is well and truly established and is driving a return to bold, maximalist interiors, full of rich colour and luxe textures. After training under revered Melbourne designer Kerry Phelan, David launched Flack Studio in November 2014. Since then, he's delivered a string of remarkable projects and has carved a distinct niche in Australia's interior design industry. With a small team of just 7 staff, Flack Studio is a vibrant, energetic Melbourne design studio, responsible for some of the most original interiors we've seen over the past few years. We think David really is pushing Australian interiors in a bold new direction, and we love it. Today we're super excited to chat to David about the incredible growth of his business, the importance of developing a distinct brand DNA, and the lessons he's learned along the way. This conversation was originally recorded back in November 2017 at our TDF Talks live event at the Design Files Open House. I first met David, actually, you were working in a different interior design practice. Then just like, it probably didn't feel like overnight to you, but in my mind I was like, whoa, where did this guy come from? And he's suddenly everywhere, and you launched your practice in 2014. So it hasn't really been that long given the calibre of projects that you're working on. Can you just give us a tiny bit of a background of the timeline of starting your own practice and how that kind of came about?
So like any graduate, like I was very hungry to get into the industry. When I graduated uni, it was the GFC hit, so like you could not get a job anywhere. I was just like, I'll do anything. So, and I only actually ever wanted to work at Hecker, Phelan and Guthrie, which it was called then. And I used to hound them all the time. Eventually I was like, they hired me and I was just like a rouse about like filling up water jugs. Actually it was cleaning the toilets, emptying the rubbish bins. And it was just like, I was just like, I just need to get into this industry and really conquer it. And I did actually always set my goal on, I want to work with the best firm and learn from the best people. So I started there, and then actually I was fortunate enough to go with Kerry when she set up KPDO, and it was like probably the hardest 4.5 years ever, but it was so amazing. I just still think she's one of my favourite designers in the world, and I learned so much, and I was so fortunate to be at her side that whole time. I was almost like a sponge. I just absorbed everything I could. And then eventually I decided that I didn't know whether I actually wanted to be a designer. Sort of you go through these waves, am I good enough? You know, I stuffed up here and I didn't do a good job there. Then I thought, I might experience things elsewhere. So I decided to leave KPDO, and I was planned to save, and I wanted to work at Ilse Crawford in London. That was the next plan of attack. In between, people just started getting me to do a few jobs. At that time, I was sort of like, oh, actually, maybe I could do this. And it was all very organic. Like, I didn't actually ever think that I would set up a business or a studio. Like, I actually only had 4 years' experience with Kerry, so like to other people might not seem that much experience, but I think it was very accelerated. It just sort of really grew organically. I decided that, okay, well, maybe if I somehow didn't get to London, because I'm sitting here.
Got a bit distracted along the way, as you do, yeah.
So then I thought, if I'm going to set up a studio, I'm going to set up one of the best studios. That's kind of how it evolved. And then I decided to embark on a journey with a branding agent, but not when I say branding, it's like, I'm going to create a logo and a business card. What I actually wanted to do was like go, okay, what is the personality and the soul of David Flack? Is it going to be called something else? Blah, blah, blah. But I always knew I didn't want to be a singular name. I knew I'd wanted to be a studio. So we did derive, and we came up with, like, my branding people, like, Flax, like a really cool last name, so...
It really is, yeah.
It goes with everything.
It's memorable.
And then it did... It just grew. It does feel very accelerated, I will admit. Like, each day I'm like, yeah.
And what does your team look like now? So you started with yourself and one or two...
I also started by myself in the first year. So 2014 was... So first year was doing those jobs before I... And then at that time, I was concurrently working on the DNA of what Flax Studio would be. And then when I launched, I had some really amazing photography taken of small projects, and I really just launched with four strong projects, and then the team grew pretty quickly to about two, and now we're up to seven.
Amazing. Even though you say you weren't really planning to start a studio, then when you say things like, oh, but I knew I really had to have a strong DNA, and clearly you're intuitively quite good at business as well as design, so do you think that's correct?
Definitely. Look, one of the questions Lucy sent through to me when we were preparing was, did I know what I was doing when I started? No, I had no bloody idea what I was doing. But yes, I did have a strong intuition about what I liked in the industry and what I actually wanted to be as a person within the design community. And I always say design community because I think the people that are around us, I'm friends with all the directors of all the practices around Melbourne. We all call each other, we all interact, we all share war stories and congratulate each other. But I think you know what you don't want to do from working with someone else, and that's why I always stress, if you are a graduate, you need to do an apprenticeship and you have to stick it out, because you just learn so much from those experiences. Yeah. But I definitely had a strong sense of what I wanted, and yeah, I think I do have business now.
Yeah.
I learn something every day.
And do you,
times 20.
Yeah, me too. And do you feel like the time you spent with Kerry, which you said was really rewarding but incredibly challenging, because she was going out on her own, and even though she's so well regarded, because it was a ground up kind of business, did that play a very formative role in, like, your learning for then setting up Flax Studio?
Not necessarily, I would say, because I think my business model is completely different to Kerry. You can't actually compare, because she's, like, been in the industry for 30 years, but... You know, and it was really interesting thing, but Kerry had a massive pre-existing clientele, and she's like, you know, it's always been high-end. I actually was only trained in high-end, and we are high-end designers now, but we also, in the early years, I was doing things that I never did at KPDO, so I was kind of flexing my muscles and my brain, just having a lot of fun with materiality that I would never have used at KPDO.
Yeah. I just was wondering, like, from the business side, you know, I guess when Kerry left Heckerford, then building a business from scratch, developing your own branding and her own kind of, I guess, presence within that Melbourne design community. I just wondered if that time and being part of that at a formative stage might have influenced how focused you've been on your branding and DNA, but perhaps not. Maybe by osmosis.
Yeah. I think when you're in it, you're like totally in it. Like, I am like all over my business. You know, I have people, I have staff, but I know everything about it. Doesn't mean I necessarily facilitate everything, but I know everything about it, and I know every detail. I know every finish. I know every client. I know everything. Like, you could rattle up, we've got 40 projects on the books, and I rattle off every single finish, every design. Like, it's just like, you have to be really in it.
Yeah.
And I think when you're really in it and it's your own baby, you just drive it, and you do learn along the way. Yeah, that works, that doesn't work, but you kind of instinctually know what's right. So I guess that feeds into how you run a business.
Yeah.
Too.
Totally.
But it is, you know, I always say it's like, you know, 20% design, 80% business. Yeah, it's not just design.
And before we get into talking more about your look, your distinctive look and your projects, just on the business end of it for a little longer, I'm interested to know that process of saying, when you sat down and said, okay, what's our brand DNA? Where do we want to place ourselves within the community of design in Melbourne? How did you do that? Who did you work with on that? And when you sat down, what was the kind of process of kind of coming to that story?
Yeah, sure. So I worked with three people, Joel Wells, Alexandra, can't pronounce her last name, but I love her, and Mike Gesser, who still does all Flak Studios branding now. So we did, like, it was all called brand strategy, so we really formulated the DNA, and as we're really getting to know me and what I strive for in a business, you know, like some of the things, you know, I wanted to be a generous business. I always wanted to be humble, and I always wanted to be sophisticated and fun. What one of my biggest drives was, and I think the reason why we are successful, is that we are in customer service and we are always about the client, like from day one to the end of the project. So when you have those kind of things, it does feed what Flak Studio is about. So yeah, so we definitely came up with what the branding was about. Funny thing was, when it was Flak Studio, then they were writing quotes for me at the time, and I was like, oh, I'd always sign off my emails, oh, thanks babe, have an awesome day. it's so great. I'm so excited.
Aren't they on your business cards and stuff?
All my business cards are actually just things that I would say. And when they presented it, I was just like, signed it off straight away. I'm like, that is like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And it felt really comfortable for me. And I think that's the important thing. And I do think that's why people do feel maybe a little semi-connected to the studio, because I think it does have a strong personality. And I think it's really reflective of me and my team, which I really like. So I did want to enter the market and go, well, you know, here's so-and-so and so-and-so. What am I going to be? You know, I don't want to be the next person. You know, you don't come to Flak Studio and get a white kitchen, you know.
No, you don't. So,
and I always knew that, you know, but the work's getting, you know, bolder and bolder by the minute.
Yeah. And so on that note then, you do have such a distinctive look. I wonder how much of that is just intuitive, and that's just part of how you design, your design approach, or is that something that's been quite cleverly orchestrated? Because in Melbourne, I feel like there is so much incredible design talent, so many amazing interior design studios. It must have been a challenge to kind of carve your niche. And before you came along, I wouldn't have even necessarily thought that there is room for another amazing studio, but you've built it and you've created this niche. So how strategic has that been to create a really distinctive style within that?
Oh, look, I definitely think there's strategy behind that. And when I left Kerry's, I was like really lacking in confidence, and I was like, shit, I don't even think I can do this, you know, like you're always working under someone else, and I was always the young guy there. I didn't have the confidence, and it wasn't until I completed a few projects that I'm like, oh, actually maybe I can do this, and you know, this is maybe my aesthetic. But I think aesthetic does grow, and like my taste is evolving very dramatically, and it is informed by like mostly literature and old books or magazines and travel. One of my aims was to create a studio where you would open the book and you'd immediately know that it's Flak Studio, because all my favourite architects from around the world, I always just go, oh, that's Vincent van Dyson, that's Ilse Crawford. I could pick it a mile away.
Yeah.
And I actually was like, I want to be one of those people.
Yeah. That's such a powerful thing. Even just in any business, like so many times so far you've said, you know, I wanted to be that guy, and I feel like it like manifested a lot of these, you know, things. It's kind of looking ahead, I guess, at what you want to be in 5 years. And even when you were like cleaning the toilets at Heck Guthrie, going, I know what I don't want to be and I know what I want to be. And that's really a powerful thing. How would you describe your kind of signal for the Flak Studio look?
I think the best way I would describe Flak Studio, it has, the lines are very clean, but it's about the clash of materiality. And I think what we strive for is a really eclectic mix of materials, and often you'll see a materials board and it might be this big, but when you see our house or a project, it somehow feels fresh. So that's something that there's always an earthiness to it, and highly detailed. And I always talk to people, our work is about navigation, so we're not throwing all our fireworks off at once, but it's actually, I'm happy to open a mirror cupboard in a powder room and it's a beautiful lacquered red, you know, with a little, you know, custom PowerPoint or something inside, you know, like that gives me more joy than, you know, letting off all bells and whistles on the front elevations. Yeah, it's hard sometimes to describe your work, but I think the more we grow and the more work that finishes, I definitely am myself seeing a strong thread.
And on that note, because you've got staff working with you now and a number of great designers in your team, how do you translate your look and your style through them? And how do you even, when you're hiring a new designer, know that they're going to weave into that Flex Studio look seamlessly? Yeah.
You know, if someone ever said, what's the biggest challenge in running a business? It is always your team. I adore my team, and I think it's taken a bit to get there, but, you know, it is hard, but I think when you're working under the umbrella of someone, well, you're working actually for them and you adapt to their aesthetic and their style very quickly. But I do think to be a really successful designer, you do have to live and breathe it. Like, that's what, like, I'm thinking about things all the time, you know. Yeah. Like, and you see inspiration from anywhere. Every project, you know, I'll do the schematic, I'll always do the finishes, I'll always do the design development. But under that, I've always got, you know, whether it's a senior designer or my associate, we're still there facilitating the documentation. So there's my vision. It's about how do you detail it? How do you, you know, make these projects highly functional? So it's projects evolve. They don't just sort of go, oh, there's a project. Like, they do take time. And I think my staff are really inquisitive, and they want to learn and grow too.
So yeah.
I push them really hard too, yeah, and challenge them, you know.
And on that note too, like, clients are a huge part of the collaborative process too. And I know when we've interviewed you, you've always spoken about how the client's almost the most important piece of the puzzle, because you've got a very brave aesthetic and you need the right clients to be behind that. So how does that work? Do you now find your look is so clear and strong that you're attracting the right kind of client, or do you feel like some clients you just have to say from the get-go, I don't think we're right for you? Like, how has that unfolded?
Look, that's one thing I always set out to do. I'm happy to be by myself for years, but I'll never work on a project that I don't believe in. I said no more than I've ever said yes, and I think that is one strength that I would highly recommend, is like, always have, you know, a clear vision of what your client is. You know, it's all right for people to come to you, but to have your client is a really important thing. And I think client is king. Some clients are really challenging, but some are really great. Actually, nearly all my clients are really great. And now that the studio has, you know, a lot of speed and sort of traction behind it, and also a lot of finished products, like, we're, you know, becoming now, sound like a wanker, but like, internationally renowned now, because we are pushing into Asia. We've got projects in Seoul, Shanghai, Japan, and we've had lots of inquiries from America. And it's something we really want to push forward in the next few years, is actually to be a very strong international player.
You're amazing. I'm so inspired by that. I can't believe that. So, yeah, talk us through then, just this year, what's been in the studio for you, like the key projects this year.
Yes. Okay. So this year we've had 18 projects being constructed, and they're dwindling down now, which is really exciting. So it's like phenomenal amount of work in construction. I can't even describe how crazy that is.
Yeah.
And then we've probably got about another 25 in development. So we've always got things in development.
I feel like you need 10 more staff. Like, I can't believe your small team.
Well, they all kind of ebb and flow, and like, they go in and out of stages, and then sometimes they all erupt at once.
Yeah.
So this year the projects have got bigger and bigger, you know, and there's a few pivotal turning points in the business. So like, you know, the start of 2015, we had this really huge house sign up in Hawthorne, and it was one of the first architectural full scope and garden architecture and full blown interiors, and a very high budget and very high end. So that finishes in January. So that's been 3 years.
Whoa.
From start to finish. Then I always remember the point when Shandon contacted our office, and I was still actually in my old house in West Gulf. And I was like, man, Shandon's owned by LVMH Group. So they're like, all the French corporates are coming out. And I just couldn't believe that they were contacting me. And so we just turned up. They're like, I'll catch up for a coffee. So we turned up. And at that stage, I didn't have a practice manager. It was just me, and I had another staff. So I said to Mark, my partner, I said, oh, can you come and let's pretend that you're practice manager?
and what happened next?
Yeah, well, I don't even think we just were probably really casual looking too. I don't even think, although I'm always pretty casual looking. We just turned up, and then next minute we walk into the boardroom at Shandon, and I'm like, oh, holy shit, we have totally basically fucked up here.
Why? What happened?
Oh, it was just like
too casual.
It was really, really formal. So we presented, and you know what? They loved our work, and I'm always quite charismatic when I present, and I really believe in what we can do, and I know I could have done stand on, but it would have been an epic project. And my friend Adele Winteridge from Foolscap is doing that now. To wrap up a long story, yes, we were underprepared, but what they were drilling me on was about process and how could you deliver. I'm like, yeah, I can deliver, but actually they wanted to know how we could deliver. And we walked out, and actually instead of going, oh, I'm really pissed off, we actually just went, okay, we need to like step it up. We're kind of heading towards the big league now if we've got these people knocking on our door. So how are we going to win these jobs? So Mark actually actively became practice manager, and we both drive the business together now. But, you know, we really reworked how we presented and how we spoke about our process.
It's a great way to frame what could have been a setback and what could have really got you down, to just kind of go, okay, what have we learned here, you know?
Yeah, and then we signed up Ginger and Smart to do their national rollout, which was a really amazing. We are, you know, 80% high-end residential. I love residential. Like, that is what I love. But I do love interesting, high-design commercial products. And that's how we have tailored the business. Like, we won't do a little cafe down the road made it, you know, with cut milk crates. You know, it has to be something really interesting and amazing. So there's been a few pivotal clients along the way that you collect, and then you go, okay, we've done it. We've done a really successful thing, and we're moving on to the next thing. So, you know, it is something that you go, okay, how do we embrace this and keep going?
Not to ask you a personal question, but how has it gone to fold, you know, your life partner in as a business partner, and how does that work, like, as a dynamic, and how do you do that?
I know, yeah. My mum and dad run a business, and so I've grown up around a family business my whole life. So I actually, running a business is really, really, really hard. Like, it is so stressful.
It's all consuming.
It's all consuming. So if you ever want to set up a business, be prepared to work like 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. But there's so many rewarding things about it. But yeah, it is like, you can't even describe.
I can vouch for that because I live right near David's office. I drive past his office every night. When I'm coming home from work at 9 p.m, his lights are still, and I'm like, oh, it's okay. I don't mind that I'm at work. Because I know you're sitting in there working too.
Night shift, I call it. Night shift. It's really amazing because, like, we really support each other, and we work really hard, and, like, we're really passionate about the studio and where it's going and creating something together and bouncing things off. Like, yeah, we probably speak about work way too much and overconsume this, but actually it is the most consuming thing in our life at the moment. It's about actually what's a goal for me next year is, like, how do I get better balance in my life, and how do I, you know, break away from other things a little bit more. But it's really empowering, and it's really intense.
Yeah, totally. I hear you. That I've got a similar kind of feeling about my business. So where do you see, like, what's next for you? What's the 5-year plan, or what are you looking forward to?
Well, we just designed a really amazing kitchen and bathroom showroom in Glen Iris. It's called Navi, so you'll start to see that filter on. And then I'm flying to Korea on Monday morning to open the next caravan and present a bakery that we're designing there. And then we'll go over to Shanghai to photograph a art gallery that we designed. So, like, for us,
it's amazing. It's so amazing. Like, you're saying it like it's just normal. That's not normal.
I remember when the client from Seoul called, and I was like, Seoul is like such a random place on our radar. And I remember the client, they're awesome. I love them so much. And they called like maybe 5 other top tier studios in Melbourne, and they never got through, or they didn't like how they engaged the thing. And we were like, when they called, we were like, oh my God, I can't believe someone international is calling us to do their project. So we literally, I was there in like 48 hours. We're like, okay, let's just jump on a plane, spend the money, let's just go face to face and meet them. So that's what we did. And they were like super impressed by that. But that was a massive turning point in our business, that how it's super difficult to execute a project overseas, but it's really, really challenging. Like, I'm probably on the phone 2.5 hours a day for the next caravan that we've been doing, and it's bigger and completely different and amazing. So I can't wait for everyone to see that. But
bloody hell.
But yeah, we designed our new studio this year, which was really amazing, and we only built it for 8 people, so we've got 1 position left.
Oh God, yeah, you can't grow.
We're actually not growing anymore. And one thing I have learned is that I love designing, and you can't design if we're more than that many people. Like, I would lose touch with what the studio is about.
Then you're just a manager rather than.
Yeah, and I don't actually like managing. I just don't. I like designing and I like facilitating projects. Yeah, so we're not growing anymore. I just actually think where we are pushing is just even more high-end and more international projects, and just always loving what we do.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing. It's like, you don't want to wake up and it feeds through your work, I think, when you're kind of over it, or it feeds through the staff. So I think...
Yeah. Totally.
But we actually ticked all our five-year plan within like a year.
Oh.
So we had to rewrite our... It's like, it's the funny thing. It's like, you never think that this would happen. When I started Flex Studio, I was actually in my wardrobe, which was like this weird room before the bedroom, and that I just had my old Mac and I was just sitting there. I was like literally this guy in a wardrobe.
Writing your five-year plan.
Writing all these plans, and then we literally ticked all of them, so we had to rewrite the business.
That's amazing. That's so amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's super inspiring. Now it's time for 10 quick questions with David. What time do you set your alarm in the morning?
6:05.
What do you eat for breakfast?
Boiled eggs.
Every morning?
Pretty much. I'm pretty boring. Actually, I do that because it's really efficient. I boil them a few days before.
Do you? You have a whole fridge worth of boiled eggs.
Yeah.
I love that. Your preferred mode of transport?
Pretty much walk everywhere. I like to rationalise my neighbourhood.
First thing you do after arriving at work?
Write a list of what I'm going to do for the day.
What is the most visited website on your web browser this week?
I know. I've been researching lots of metals. So trying to find... I've literally just been hunting for the right metal. Really boring stuff.
What was the last thing you bought online?
A pair of Acne pants.
What's your favourite thing to have for lunch?
Rice paper rolls, Vietnamese.
What is your favourite neighbourhood in Melbourne?
Fitzroy.
It's 9 p.m. on a weeknight. What are you doing?
Getting home from work.
I think you're still at work.
Yeah.
And when is your bedtime?
10:30, 11.
Thank you so much, David.
Oh, thank you.
We've covered the rise of Flax Studio a few times over the past 3 years. You can revisit our coverage of Flax Studio's incredible fit-out for Caravan Cafe in Seoul, South Korea, via the link in our show notes. You should definitely also revisit our studio tour of Flax Studio's luscious Fitzroy headquarters, full of vibrant colour, as to be expected, and an ever-changing furniture collection. Let's just say, when it comes to bold, colour-popping interiors, Flax Studio definitely walks the talk. Again, you can revisit that story via our show notes, or if listening via the Overcast app, you'll be seeing a link right now. As this episode goes out this week, our team is in Milan covering the world's biggest design fair. We're capturing a whole lot of incredible design and colour inspiration in a new video series in partnership with Jewelux. That series features David Flack alongside other inspiring colour aficionados, with the first episode going live next Monday, April 23rd. You've been listening to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast documenting Australia's most inspiring creative people, places and happenings. I'm your host, Lucy Fagans. This podcast is produced by our managing editor, Al Murrell, with enhanced visuals by our art director, Annie Portelli. We are an enhanced podcast, so please download the Overcast app in order to see relevant images and links in your player while you listen. Alternatively, all links can be found in our show notes at thedesignfiles.net/podcast. Of course, you can also visit our main website, thedesignfiles.net, where we post new stories 3 times a day, featuring the best and brightest in Australian design, art, architecture, and more. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Design Files. Finally, you can email us with any tip-offs, questions or comments at podcast@thedesignfiles.net. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you like what you've heard, we would love you to support us by subscribing to TDF Talks on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.